The committee reports have come and gone, and cold hard facts are that we graduate around 8%, 80% of the native students went to the University of Alaska. This isn't very creditable. We're graduating approximately 40% of other students who enter as freshmen at the University of Alaska. This fall, one native student came around to drop out of the university, and he has to have certain signatures, and he was sort of caught between Chuck Klein's college and our college. And we kicked the signature sheet back and forth several times, getting this approval and that approval and so on. And we had a rather difficult experience, really, in getting all the signatures on this, and it's hurt quite a little bit. Not because of the difficulty in getting the signatures, but because of the fact that this student was leaving the university. I know the Board of Regents has to face the legislature, and the taxpayers, and the faculty, and so on. We, however, have to face beautiful young faces when they drop out of school. And this is always a very difficult experience to see a student leaving school. He has to have his dean signature and department head and so on. So we see this stream of people, whether they're Caucasians or black or what they are, and it always hurts. But it hurts particularly when you see a native student dropping out. This is a very, very terrible experience to have to sign your name on that card that indeed indicates a native student is going to leave the university. Well, we, both Chuck and I, were very much distraught by this situation. It was one student in particular. We were a little bit mad about it. We decided that perhaps we would at least take a shot at trying to do something about it. Now, whether it will be effective or not, whether we're getting any results or not, we don't know. But we asked each other who is interested in this, and of course, the list was extremely long. Many, many faculty members and administrators were interested in this. Very few would profess disinterest. We knew that we would have to have a relatively small committee if we were going to do anything, so we crossed names out, and finally got down to a few people. The few people were chosen on the basis of the work they'd done with the native students, driving interest in the native students, and their positions in the university, in order that the committee would have access to the various councils and the this and the that. We wanted to be able to get our proposal before the appropriate individuals, rather than have it die in a file somewhere, if we could possibly help that. We called the volunteer committee together. I'm not the chairman of the committee. There is no chairman, just a committee. We called the committee together, asked people if they're interested. They were. We have met several times through the fall. We've done quite a little bit of soul searching, a good deal of discussion, a lot of report searching. Many trips have been extended while people were outside to visit various campuses that were doing something about this. We've received information from BIA, the Rockefeller Foundation, and so on, leading us to schools which are indeed trying to be effective in this area, doing something. We were trying to find out how they were being effective, what their errors were, and so on. We didn't want to get into a situation, if we could help it, where we would begin to experiment. We knew that we could experiment for the next 80 years and perhaps get nowhere. We wanted to try to get someplace where the experimentation has been done, find out what it is they're doing, how are they doing, and bring the thing in here, adapt it to our own individual needs, and get going with it. Do something even if you do it wrong, but get moving, because it's an extremely serious problem. We did not intend to have a report prepared until around the middle of February, so we're just a little bit early in this report, but we did have the opportunity to get it before you, and so we moved ahead with it. The report is perhaps a little bit sketchy. I don't think it's too bad, however, and it will give you the idea that we have in mind, the cost for doing this. We hope that indeed we can get other than state funds for a good portion of this, but nonetheless, we laid out the dollars so you can see one way or another how much we feel it's going to cost. I have asked, actually the committee has asked, Mr. Bob Egan to present this to you. Passed these out yesterday, and so many of you have an opportunity to see them. You will outline what it is we have in mind, and ask any questions that you have. Several members of the committee, Frank Darnell, Chuck Keim are here. Several other members could not be here. And if you have questions at any time, please flag us down, stop us, and ask the question. Bob has been running the Upward Bound program here at the university for the past 2 years. He was 2 years as a counselor in Dome High School before coming here. So he has had quite a little bit to do with Native students, and I can assure you he's extremely interested in Native students. There's probably no one who has more of an interest in this campus than Native students than Bob Egan. So I'll ask Bob at this time then to present the case that we would like to present to you.
Thank you, Dean Conn, or I'm Delphi, I'm sorry. Ladies and gentlemen, I know that you've been bombarded with facts and figures till it's coming out of your ears. The facts and figures that I'll be bombarding you with, many of us get very emotional about. I know that I have a tendency to get wound up when I get on this subject, and I know it's getting close to noon, so I'll try and keep the wound upness down a little bit. But just to set a little bit, I'll say what I am faced with. Set the stage. I have a girl who is in the Upward Bound program, a senior in high school. Her stepfather, the father that adopted her, died 2 years ago. Her mother is getting along in age now. Hazel is in Hawaii, was lucky enough to be selected to participate in an exchange program. She wrote to me this fall, was very concerned about college. She wants to go, but she's scared to death. Because she and her mother have written back and forth, and her mother is waiting for the time that Hazel can take care of her. She's getting old. She no longer gets that good old ADC check because Hazel's over 18 now. So Hazel is drawn by the fact that her mother needs her, but she also knows that she needs a college education. She writes and says, I'm afraid that I'll flunk out. Is there a preparatory program I could go to get ready? Well, actually, Hazel probably doesn't need it, but still, if I look at the cold statistics, I should write back to Hazel and say, Hazel, your chances are probably 1 in 10 that if you come to the University of Alaska, you'll get through. In other words, you can come for a year, 2 years, and then you're going to have to go home as a failure and tell your mother, well, I'm not really any more employable now than I was 2 years ago, so we've really wasted some time. Or could I tell Hazel, we better compromise. Let's take something a little less difficult, a little less risky. Maybe an Associate of Arts degree, maybe a BIA Employment Assistance Training Program or something. Yes, in my heart, I don't feel it's fair because Hazel has got. She's got some problems to overcome. Or possibly I might say to Hazel, well, you know, there's a college that BIA is really beating the drum for. It's called Fort Lewis College. They've been for the last 5 years taking Alaska Native students out of Alaska and sending them to Fort Lewis. Fort Lewis has had as big a dropout rate as the University of Alaska has. But in the past year, they have developed a program because they feel their dropout problem has got to be stopped. I visited this program. I was very impressed. I went down very, very skeptical because in Nome and then here, I had had Fort Lewis College crammed down my throat as a counselor and then an Upward Bound director. So I went to see, and I came away impressed. I went negative. So what do I say to Hazel? I want to see her here next year, but I don't want to see her plucked out. But yet, as just one individual trying to work with a Native student on campus, I don't have the time. I've got a commitment to about 62 students right now out in the bush. When they enter campus as a freshman, my obligation to them theoretically is over. But when they run into a snag or something, I've got to help them, but I just don't have the time. And neither do the people on this committee. We're all concerned, but we run into roadblocks and so forth, and it just boils down to not enough time and not enough people who are really that concerned. So quickly, I want to point out something that I know is obvious, to all of you, but I think we ought to get it in perspective. It's a function of the University of Alaska. That's leadership and so forth. I mean, we're not here to debate that. But when we take a look at the population of Alaska and see that 1/4 at least is Native, and that Native population is developing leadership very rapidly and is saying, we want a place in the state. We want a piece of the action. We want to take care of ourselves. We would like to phase BIAL. But there's a big problem. They are not being provided with the teachers, with the social workers, with the pre-law students, all of these things necessary to do the things they say they want to. Just take a look at education as far as Alaska and what we're doing about it. This is the vicious circle that gets the Native student in this problem. You take a look at what's happening in the bush and it's pretty pathetic. But one of the problems is the fact that most of the teachers are like I was when I went to Mill, a tourist. They come and they go. They come up from Nebraska or California or what have you. University of Alaska last year graduated about 70 education majors, and probably another 70 left here with enough credential requirements so they could go out and teach. But yet we know that those people, Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, so forth, very, very few of them ever go to the bush. Then if we talk in terms of how many of those people were Natives, we're just about talking about nothing. Winifred Landy told me that she has a figure that there are probably 15 to 18 Native teachers in the state. You sprinkle them out there in the bush, if they're there, and it's hard to find them. So just that alone is enough to make some people concerned. I think it's enough to make the Native people point to the University of Alaska and say, why? What's wrong? Why aren't we getting this leadership that we need, we desperately need? So much for my emotional bias on that end. Now let's get into the why and so forth here on campus. Again, we've stated that many people are concerned, but again, just not enough time. And a factor that keeps cropping up, that there is no single individual here on campus whose sole function is to try and solve this problem. 92% dropout rate. Not just the dropout rate, but also what happens to the kid if he doesn't make it, which I'll get into a little more. But let me get into a few of the things that the Native has faced when he comes on campus. Some aren't, but I think we can generalize. His elementary and secondary education in the boarding school and the bush school is very inadequate. It's just not meeting his needs. And I think we could point to this tourist teacher problem and many, many other problems. And spend hours on this, but this is not our function now. But when the student comes to this campus, he's had little or no guidance in why he is coming, what his career goals are, what he conceives himself to be. He gets on campus, for instance, a boy who I worked with and known last, or in 2 years ago, and then subsequently came to the University of Alaska, was in my office last year as a freshman. He says, why can't I just go back to Nome and paddle a kayak around and forget about all this jazz? Well, we both knew why. But he's a sophomore now and is struggling. And I don't know, he may not make it. But let's get on to another point. Financial aid, you know, there's a big bag of misconceptions about financial aid for the Native student in the state. When I was a counselor in Nome, I had people say to me, Egan, why are you so bugged about getting these kids scholarships and grants and so forth? They get too much as it is. Everything's paid for. But when you get down to the nitty-gritty, as they say, of getting a kid ready to go away to school, you find that the financial aid policy of BIA is so muddled that you cannot get a straight, consistent answer from two people within BIA. The financial aid officer on this campus, year after year, has to go through a new approach. This fall we saw a very dramatic problem. We had at least 28 students who arrived on campus and then were told, sorry, no more money. We do not know how many students that morning, that Saturday, when they were told that there was no grant money, turned around, got on a wing plane and went home to the bush. Many of us scrambled around and told them, stick around. There'll be a solution. But we don't know how many left that weekend. The financial aid thing is set up so that the kid doesn't really have any sense of security. Maybe he'll get some aid when he arrives on campus, but that's the only answer he'll get. The counselors, the teachers out in the bush, the principals, they don't know. Part of my job is to travel in the bush, and I get this asked time after time. Well, what's the university's policy on financial aid for Native students? And I try and explain the problem, but really, I can't guarantee them anything because there's going to be a different approach the following year. And this does a fantastic amount of harm to the kid when he doesn't know where he stands before he even gets on campus. All right, during that initial adjustment period during his freshman year, he not only has to go through the problems that white middle-class students in Nebraska have to go through, he's also got to adjust to the big city life. He's got to adjust to a lot of new behavior patterns. If he went to a boarding school, he learned all the do's and don'ts and so forth, which really don't exist here because he's now an adult. He's got many pitfalls in his way. And he also has to perform academically at a level which he was never, never asked to in school. He's never required to. I want to know. Kids, if they write one paragraph in a year, they've done a lot. But now all of a sudden an English teacher on campus tells them, write an essay on the good or evilness of man. And he's supposed to express himself. He's never had to before. Then when the student starts getting in hot water, he starts looking for help. If he does look for help, he may find some people that know some of the answers, but generally he is too late in seeking his help. And those of us that do try and help discover that really there's not much that much we can do. The boy that I was talking about that always would like to go back to Nome and paddle around in a kayak now is carrying two courses. Two of his courses this fall were just too much for him, so he dropped quietly. Didn't tell me, didn't tell anyone. But there was really, it wouldn't have made any difference because there wouldn't have been anything we could have put him into. He's stacking up, failing his grades. Next semester, his dean will probably put him on probation or invite him to go home. The boy's starting to get to the point now where he can hack it. He should have never been in those two courses that he had to give up on. I'll get to what we feel is the solution to that in a moment. Lastly, and one of the most disheartening things, is when the student can't make it. Now, he may have been a potential college graduate, or maybe he just didn't belong here, but still, eventually he has to leave. He goes home to the village as a failure, at least in some people's eyes, but with no help about his future. He goes home to sit in the village and rot for a while. Maybe a BIA employment assistance officer will come along and put him in a program, and maybe not. But nonetheless, he goes home without anybody really caring that much after that last signature has been put on paper. So as I pointed out on paper, yes, the University of Alaska does not have the responsibility for making up for what is not being done out in the bush in the secondary school and so forth. But it does have a commitment, and a very real commitment, as far as the legislature is concerned, to accept any graduating high school student from an accredited high school in the state with a certain GPA and so forth. It's all down on paper. But in a way, there the obligation seems to stop. We talk a good line, but when the student gets on campus, the obligation starts to get muddled. And there are many of us that feel we either ought to go to that student in the bush before he comes here with a lot of delusions and say, all right, you're not going to make it, so let's channel you into some other training program, instead of making him go through this 1 or 2 year process of misery. Or if we do bring him on campus, let's admit we've got him here and then do something to give at least the academically capable, or the one with the potential, to get through here with a degree. And let's also meet the responsibility that we should be taking to see that he, if he can't make it, does get something. So what we're proposing, and again, this is just a proposed idea, there are many other solutions. This is not a panacea. But we're proposing something that is kind of a modification of what we've seen at Fort Lewis College, what we've seen at Eastern Montana College. For instance, there they had a similar problem at Montana. They started a very, very modest program, changed their dropout rate from about 90% to 35% last year. This year, when I was there in December, they lost 2 students out of 40. So I think they're doing something. Now, essentially what we're proposing is, number one, to have a body, an entity that is devoted primarily to helping the culturally different or whatever label you want to put on them, but the student who is not really in the mainstream of what's going on here as far as his cultural background, but to have this program that is designed for him, that is responsible for nothing but this type of student. And this has got to involve courses, not just somebody sitting over a coffee cup. Fort Lewis has got a program where, for instance, they have English taught as a second language. Now this is a bona fide concept that's going on at a lot of universities. People are being trained in this field. And rather than teach English 68 or English 67 for no credit, you know, the Eskimo or the Indian is a very pragmatic person, and when he sees that he's taking a course and getting no credit, he's got to start questioning. But what we propose is an English program where the student does get credit. Now maybe he may have to put a little more time in than the regular 3-credit course. We would start with an intensive English program. In other words, we would go and find where is the student and we'd work from him from there and try and bring him up. This intensive program would probably be, say, 2 or 3 credits for about 5 hours of work. Then there would be a second course designed for the student who is getting ready to compete in the regular English class, but still is not communicating on paper and verbally. This course would push them quite hard now. It would also have a speech program along parallel with it. And if the student showed that he could function at the end of a certain period of time, at a college level, or at least close to a college level, then he would be permitted to go into an English 101 type of a program. And we think that then he could succeed. And parallel to this could also be a reading program. Less credit, but also very much geared to his needs. Something Lee Salisbury and myself have seen in running our programs is that a seminar type course that just teaches a native student how to survive in a liberal arts course is necessary. They're not used to note-taking, they're not used to the cutthroat type of competition, they're not used to, well, they don't know what's expected of them. They don't know how to study for these types of courses. So something that might be a plausible solution is a liberal arts type course on a subject that is of interest to them. For instance, the subject of the native land claims, the current contemporary problem, the Alaska Native, I found last summer was very, very motivating and stimulating to the student. The student could take this type of a course, but at the same time, learn what's expected of him, learn how to take notes, learn how to prepare, then when he gets out of this, maybe then we can feed him into anthropology courses and so forth, and maybe he'll survive. All right, along with this, of course, are people. And the staff members would not just be English as a second language teacher or a seminar teacher who might be hopefully a native, and a director who hopefully also might be a native. These people are also, if you would, counselors or advisors, whose function it is to make sure that they get through to as many students as they can in a personal way. Because if we take a look at the programs on this campus who are successful, for instance, your fisheries courses out in the bush, or your electronics technology courses on campus, these are programs where the individuals teaching them have a very, very strong interest in the native students, and they want to see them get through. I think it's all you have to do is take a look at the electronic tech program, and you can see this type of thing happen. Well, the same desire would be present in the staff. They would not allow a student to fall down on all these pitfalls that are there. Because many times it's just a matter of anticipating the problem and working with the student ahead of time. Something else that we feel is very lacking is communication with the bush. And it should not be just another Gussick like myself going out visiting a bush community. It should be a bilingual native from that area who could go down the Yukon River area, or could travel in the Stewart Peninsula and talk to the students, talk to the parents. Spell out to them what the problem is of a BIA grant. How much will he be expected to have when he arrives on campus in the fall? The fact that he needs $35 for a room deposit. These things are never told to them. They arrive and then all of these things are heaped on them. So we're talking about several liaison people who would work with this program, would come on campus, see the university, be schooled in the problems. Many, hopefully, some of these people could have been graduates of the University of Alaska if we could find them. But we think they're a very important aspect of this program. I mentioned also briefly tutors. If I've got a student on this campus who has a problem, there's no money, there's no one available for me to get to tutor a student in an area that he needs a little bit of help. I can scrounge around and maybe find someone who is interested. Then I'll quickly get into the summer pre-college orientation program. Upward Bound and Copan have just, in the past, have always just barely touched the surface of the students who needed some orientation to the campus or to a campus. We've just scratched the surface of the number of students out there that need help. And if there were a pre-college orientation that were run by the academic year staff, I think we'd be a long ways ahead, because what it would be is feeding students into a program would be coming on campus, not scared to death, but very much at ease at campus. Lee Salisbury and I have both found that the students we have had, as soon as they arrive on campus, will come to us. They don't go to the counseling office, or they don't go to the dean's office. They come to us because they identify with us. Now, later they may go, say, to Dean Haynes' office or somewhere. But during that first couple of initial weeks, they've got to have somebody they know, or at least has a reputation that cares. In the fall, I have many students who come in who are not Upward Bound students because of the fact somebody out in the bush said, go see Mr. Egan, or go see one of these people. For instance, Dr. Lyons has got a reputation with many of the Yukon River area people, and he works individually with a lot of them. But with a pre-orientation program, many, many of the students would have a place to identify with. And something that I was very impressed with at Fort Lewis College was here was the probably the most gorgeous library I've ever seen, a brand new thing. lounges, easy chairs upstairs. It was gorgeous. Huge windows. I think if I had been a student there, I probably spent most of my time sleeping. It was such a comfortable atmosphere rather than studying, but that's my own personality problem. The Native student, and rather than being upstairs in that area, was down the basement in the intercultural programs area. There was bare concrete walls, a few lights hastily put up, some partitions halfway up, and they were down there seeking help from the director. They were getting tutoring, they were taking their ESL classes. They were around beat up old tables, studying together, getting tutoring. But they were down there, and they were there in and out all day long. I spent a day there, and so this wasn't put up job to impress me. It was the fact that the students identified that that was the place for them. But yet it probably had the most undesirable physical setting on the whole campus. It's a new campus. So to kind of wind up the narrative end, we're saying that this program can't be just another program developed by some well-intending white men to help the Native. The Native have seen plenty of these. This has got to have the backing, and it's got to be staffed by Native people themselves. Now, this was rather hurriedly done, but we took it to the Fairbanks Native Association, as we would like to take some more if we do get the backing here from the administration, to see what they think. Now, Jerry Ivey, the president of the Fairbanks Native Association, said that he was going to be here this afternoon, but the change made it impossible. So he told me that the basic philosophy of this program they're very impressed with. They support. There are some points that they would like to question us about, which is as it should be. He said the thing that they're most impressed with is the fact that now we're talking about being concerned with a student who can't make it at the University of Alaska and doing something about it. So again, I can't emphasize enough that this has got to be a program that is very much backed by the Native people. If it isn't, I imagine there's a goal like most other programs. It'll be a while here on campus if it's lucky enough, and then it'll fade away. Money-wise, an academic year program would probably cost in the neighborhood of $100,000. Now, this estimate is conservative. I think if we got down to the nuts and bolts, there'd be some minor things that would have to be added. But I think that's a pretty good ballpark figure. If we added a summer program for 40 students, this is an estimate again, we're talking about another $60,000, maybe $57,000. Where we would get this money is up for debate, but there are sources. But essentially, the university is going to have to give us some backing, or else we've just been another committee that's talked, filed reports, and there they sit. Sort of in closing, I'd like to mention something that I read in the University of Montana student newspaper last fall by an Indian student who was commenting on something that was going on in that campus, an attempt to start a program similar to this. What he said was, we don't need any more Indian experts. What we need is a lot more expert Indians. And I feel very strongly about this. This is starting to sink in my mind, at least. There are other committee members here. We tried to have Native students here. The change kind of messed us up, but Tony Vasquez is here. And we have someone else here, I noticed, who is in the state senate. I think maybe it would be a valid thing for you people to not only ask us questions, but ask these two people who have heard this for the first time to get their impressions. Thank you.
Before we do open this to questions, there are a couple of things that I would like to point out. The committee decided that it wasn't going to be able to change the world, so it decided very, very early in the game that it would have to operate within the constraints that were presented to us by the high school systems of the state, the BIA high schools, human nature in the university, and so on. We did, however, take into account that there are immense flexibilities at the University of Alaska. This is a small university, and the lines of communication are not very long.
Right.
Possibly it's in a long period. We could take this into account. Hoping that this happens. This, to an extent, has been an indictment of the university. This is intentional to an extent, but I would want to point out that there are a number of programs at the university which have been very successful with Native students. Not completely with Native students by a long way. But these are essentially programs which are shot directly at the university. Or there are programs which have unique schedules, such as our electronic technology program, or We would try off the hard. I can't guarantee success in implementing the thing at this time because you need certain people to make this successful. So we would have to get out and do some very hard recruiting to indeed be sure that we have the appropriate people. Otherwise, we're just throwing $100,000 out the door. The people here are very important. They're almost as important as the money. We've discussed this, and yeah, we felt that it would be some of that. We would like to do the thing correctly. We're somewhat reluctant to partially implement it at too low a level because this may mean that the program will indeed be unsuccessful, and then we can say, well, it's been tried, it was unsuccessful, and actually it hadn't been tried.
Fort Lewis was Title III funds, and Montana was a collection. It was some BIA backing, some tribe backing, university, and then I think they had some title money. What they did was ground every place they could go. They went to a couple of the reservations, to the tribal leaders, and got the support for the liaison type people. It was just, they felt something had to start, so they've just been gluing it together. But Fort Lewis is federal money.
It just occurred to me that the they could be out there and help
We wanted to present this to you as a matter of information. It's a little early because this isn't really as good as it should have been. We get another month or so, and having had a more university review would have been a better proposal. But we did want to get it before you to show you possible programs. We wanted to hopefully get your support and the support of the administration to go ahead and try to do something in the coming year. But we're not absolutely sure by a long way that we can't go out and find some money for this program. Maybe we'll be discouraged and we'll really shake the bushes, but we have done some preliminary work on this, and it hasn't been completely discouraging by a little bit. Now, what the new administration in Washington will mean and so on, I don't know. I suspect it will be much more favorable to us than it has been in the past. But we would like your support. We want you to study the thing. We want you to be aware of what it is we're trying to do. We want you to also be aware of the problem that exists here. Maybe the statistics are holding people to drop out. Pardon me, the students are concerned. You didn't know about it before. So I think it's important to be aware of it.
Is it possible to tie down the CIA money to the local officer and just come here and have one idea that
I think now Bob, you correct me here because you have a lot more to do with this than I do, but I think the big problem with CIA money is the kid doesn't know in advance whether he's going to have it or not, and when he gets here, I suspect he probably gets muddled up into this form and that form and so on down the line. Now, go ahead.
Yeah.
And what the Montana program did, they have a relationship with BIA now. If a student will apply early summer, then, yeah, and this is a problem, but actually with liaisons out there pushing the kids, I think it could be done. They will apply in the summer or early spring. Then BIA will tell them what their grant will be in August. And then the tribal representative who represents the University or Montana State College will go to the family and the student and indicate to him what he better have in his pocket when he arrives on campus.
Well, I think this fall too, if we had had this program in operation, the administration program could have been very close to court. We could have given the kids official assurance that this and this and this would be taken care of. And indeed, I think that, as I recall, at least the money did appear from private sources, which I'm going to take care of all of it. So that but the kids had this thrown at them in the newspapers and so on. And they can read that newspaper and get a experience. If you think back to the day that you left your hometown and went to the state university, there were a lot of surprises there waiting for you at that state university. How do you get checked into the dormitory? Where do we eat? How do we register? So on. Think about coming out of Costco or Shakespeare or someplace like that, going to the state university. This is a tremendous slap in the face. And this is what we're supposed to do, something that helps the kids over this initial few weeks, perhaps year and a half. We think if we keep them around here for a while, they'll not come dumb at all. We just happened to run up against this one kid one day,
the number of threats, you know, that might be made, but you know, the more the better on that.
Was there another question?
Well, I was just questioning some of this information was possibly given them, and I thought was possibly given them in the high school.
This is very true. We do, however, receive a number of students from Chamawa, places like this, and they don't seem to be pushing the University of Alaska very much, so I think a lot of the information just doesn't get through to the kids. This is true.
What's the relationship of the And the state have a scholarship program?
Yes, there are many scholarship programs out of the
Navy students. For Navy students, right? All right, we have to ask you about it. Just a long story. $50,000 to the
Government has an agreement on a kind of a little bit different land grant type thing. Any Native student can go to Fort Lewis College tuition free. So BIA has said it is cheaper for us to send a Native student to Fort Lewis College than it is to the University of Alaska. I was told this as a counselor, no. And for instance, in about 4 years ago, they took 30 Native students out of Alaska and put them in Fort Lewis College at the end of the year where there were three left.
Any other? Okay. Are there any other questions?
Can I make one quick comment? It indeed it is the program we're concerned about, not the financing of it for the student. We've got to give the program to hold the kids here. We can get the money from the state and everything else.
I'd like to say one thing before we wind up the meeting this afternoon. I hope that you can all be present throughout all of it. I think we ought to try to integrate this in the whole overall challenge for higher education here in Alaska. And sometimes you see the specific solution better in terms of a general approach. And since this may be my swan song, probably is at the board, I want to say something about what I feel could be a challenge future. I keep challenging the university as much as I can. And I think that
the specific problem that you're very properly placing your attention on is one that is generic to everyone. You're right. I remember when I went to college. I'll never forget the painful experience and how I came close to dropping out. So this is a serious problem. It is going to be solved just on university level. But that, of course, doesn't excuse the university from having a very prime responsibility. But I think there's some other things we can do here, too. And before we finally wind up, I think we ought to tie this all together in some kind of overall approach. What are we going to do with all of this fine presentation that we've been having here, other than just treating them separately?
We're going to get them all in a folder, and then we're going to start working on them.
Good.
What are you doing? I said you.
You'll be a man of leisure.
Fine. Thank you, Chuck. The meeting is scheduled to resume at 1:45 again in this room. Now, with us, we just come in the door, a group of students, and the students are going to pair off with board members, and they'll meet up for lunch, and then we'll come on back. And Jim Gibbs is sort of spearheading this, and Jim will stand, and then students will stand, and we'll get the group together. That's all for now.